Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
President Obama lays out his plans for the Middle East. A bicyclist dies after getting hit by a truck. And a couple of Oregonian clam diggers are found dead in Alaska.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. That's the normal kind of enraptured, by the way, not the crazy religious kind. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, May 20th, 2011. A bicyclist has died after getting struck by a truck along Highway 211 between Woodburn and Malala. Authorities identified the cyclist as 51-year-old Orlando French III from McMinnville. He was pronounced dead at the scene. The accident happened around 2 p.m. near South Kaufman Road and Milepost 8. The highway was closed in both directions as part of the investigation. The vehicle that struck the bicyclist was a commercial semi-truck. The driver was identified as 47-year-old Paul Scheinen of Malala. He did stop at the scene and was working with investigators. Lieutenant Greg Hastings of the Oregon State Police says as the truck and the semi-trailer were passing the bicyclist, for an unknown reason, the bicyclist fell onto the pavement underneath the passing semi-trailer and was run over by the right rear wheels of the trailer. Police said this stretch of Highway 211 can be dangerous for bicyclists. Last March, a 67-year-old bicyclist was struck by a hit-and-run driver in the same area. He was critically injured and died several days later.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for...
Yes?
Didn't you just buy a new computer, like, yesterday?
I did. I'm trying to do, like, kind of a paperless sort of a thing. This is a computer.
You're just reading everything off your iPhone.
Not everything. I have papers. I have the phone. I'm reading some of it off my phone.
So you bought a new computer. You're not actually going to use it.
There's a long story involved in this. I can.
All right. Let me tell you.
We can talk about it.
Make it absolutely clear right now that I'm not asking what the long story is,
know,
nor
know,
asking you to tell it.
I'm the answer to your question. Yes, I'm reading some of the stories off of my phone.
Okay. Let's check it. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, May 20th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, your entertainment news, also Science on the March. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we got the Cannibal Watch, Clergy Watch coming up. Also, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today talking about the life, legacy, and career of Mr. Steve Martin. And it's all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
President Obama's speech yesterday, in which he laid out his vision for the Middle East, has stirred a lot of controversy. New York Congressman Elliot Engel says President Obama's call for a Palestinian state to be based on pre-1967 borders was a big mistake.
This is President who?
President Barack Obama.
Is he new?
Surely you've heard of him. He kills pirates and terrorists.
That guy.
Yes.
All right, okay.
He plays basketball.
All right.
He says it's, Engel, that is, says it's time for the Palestinians to come back to the table with Israel for talks.
The Palestinians have to decide. If they want a state, they're not going to get it on the backs of terrorism. They're going to get it by sitting side by side with Israel and negotiating.
It's not even really coming back to the table. It's coming back to a small card table in the garage.
Because Israel has been, like, so willing to just, you know, hear their needs and wishes up to this point.
Have I expressed my views on this whole thing before?
Yes.
That everybody should shut up?
Yes.
Seriously, and you of all people should be with me on that. That you know, really, no one in this situation should be bitching about anything.
Well, I don't agree with that. I believe the Palestinians do they really do have a right to bitch about it. I mean, you remember what Israel was called before they changed the name to Israel?
It was called a state that didn't exist.
It was called Palestine.
Yeah, but everything was called something else. I don't see you moving away from here because we took it from other people.
Well,
That's right. Pwned.
I haven't had somebody like move into my house and then make me like live in a closet, you know, downstairs.
No,
either.
But I'm just saying we moved into an entire country, though, is my point.
I didn't.
Yeah, well, I would imagine that. So by then, by extension, anybody there now who did not actively participate in the move, by your definition, would be exempt from any sort of criticism.
Well, I also believe that the Native Americans have a point. If they're angry about like being killed and shoved into reservations and given like smallpox laden blankets, I do believe they may have a point with being a little testy about that.
Let me understand this. They have a point.
They have a point.
Okay.
You know, just
that's
like
the extent of your.
I believe the Palestinians have a point as well.
That's the extent of your acknowledgement. After the killing and the reservations and the smallpox laden blankets, they have a point.
I'm saying I believe they are within their rights to be a little bit miffed.
I'm just saying if we're gonna like grant everybody a pass because they were shoved around by other people, then I'm just saying it doesn't seem like anybody is any more or less guilty than anybody else on that score. So. And also, here's the thing. It doesn't matter where you live. Like, it doesn't matter in terms of God. It doesn't matter in terms of the afterlife. It doesn't matter in terms of your religion. It doesn't matter in terms of... And when they say culture, they really just mean religion. And when they say religion, they just mean superstition. So anybody... And I really am not taking one side or the other. I'm just saying, can we all just agree that it doesn't really matter in terms of, like, you know, in terms of some galactic overlord that no one can actually see whether you live in a certain place or not.
Well, yes, God-wise, probably not.
But that's what this is all based on, is that both groups believe, I mean, here's the thing, both groups believe that the land was promised to them by the Almighty, that it is their destiny to live there. The idea that they were living there and then they got moved, you know, to somewhere else, you know, nearby, that's less an issue. That wouldn't matter nearly as much if everybody in the equation did not believe that it was their destiny, read, that it was dictated by God to live there. That's the only reason that this debate gets so superheated. Everybody in the world's been kicked from one place to another. The only reason that it matters so much in situations like this is because they believe that it has been foretold by the Almighty that they shall live there. And you of all people should be with me
I'm with you on that. Yeah. I'm more about the Palestinians having an issue with the fact that they were herded into the Gaza Strip and that there's like army guys with guns who make them stay there.
Well, be that as it may, I mean, I suppose we're not going to settle the Palestinian-Israeli conflict right now. So this is probably a time where we should just...
Yeah.
I'm just going to ratchet things down right now because I can just see this is already going to consume an entire hour if we don't. But I will just say that there is no right side and there is no wrong side. If everybody would just sort of live in the actual now and the world of what is as opposed to the world of what they imagine to be the case, you know, then, you know... Everybody would just... This could all be resolved by the end of the day.
Well, New York Congressman Elliot Engel says he believes President Obama's intentions are good, but that Israel cannot be taken for granted.
I think the president has good in his heart. I'm a supporter of the president, but I do think that we ought to remember that Israel's our only ally in the Middle East.
I mean, it just seems to me it's a zero-sum game. Like, everything's got to go somewhere. And also, at this point, you're talking about something that happened 63 years ago, which means that even if you were, let's say if you were like, if you were more than 10 years old, you know, when the state of Israel was created, you're, you know, you're what? You're 73, which means that the vast majority of people there now weren't around when it happened. So we're now entering the point where we are entering the stage of time where people are bitching about something that happened when they were not alive, didn't affect them, didn't impact their lives at all. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, the Jews are still a little bit cranky about the Holocaust thing, too, and that happened, you know, to their grandparents.
Well, I don't know that you can necessarily equate the Holocaust with having to move.
Well,
I mean, there has unless been, you're an anti-Semite, Don.
There has been a certain amount of death and destruction and pointies of guns.
Right, but I'm
stuff.
But you can, but you understand
in
you can't
Palestine
but
as
you
well.
Can't equate the two. You understand that?
No, but I'm saying if that's your argument that you know it happened a long time ago, so get over it. You know, then
and that's not my argument. My argument is that it's moving a long time ago, as opposed to the Holocaust, which even you understand that those are two different things.
Those are two different
okay,
things.
Okay, that's my point.
The bodies of all five clam diggers who were reported missing from their 20-foot skiff as they returned from a day of harvesting in Anchorage, Alaska, have been found, authorities said Wednesday. They were longtime contract workers for Pacific Alaska Shellfish, which was notified on Tuesday that the crew was missing in an area in the Cook Inlet where they were digging for razor clams. Three of their bodies were found later that day. The remaining two bodies were spotted Wednesday by a Coast Guard helicopter crew on the mudflats off the beach, less than a mile from where the other bodies were found. President and CEO of Pacific Seafood Group, Frank Dulcich, says this is the most tragic event in our company's 70-year history. As Oregonians, this hints especially close to home because three of the deceased are from Oregon, while two are from California. Those individuals are considered close friends and family of many within our organization. Right now, our number one priority is to help the loved ones who've lost a husband, a father, brother, or friend. There is a memorial fund being set up for the Polly Creek clam diggers at Wells Fargo Bank branches. The three found Tuesday had on life jackets, while the two recovered Wednesday did not. They're saying that they don't know what led up to them being in the water. The weather was relatively light. There were only moderate waves and light winds before they went missing. A former teammate of cyclist Lance Armstrong tells the CBS program 60 Minutes that the seven-time Tour de France winner used performance-enhancing drugs. In a 2005 interview with Larry King, Armstrong steadfastly denied any doping accusations.
What is this? Armstrong won?
Yes.
I've said it for 7 years. I've said it for longer than 7 years. I have never doped.
Well, there you go. Armstrong explains why it would have been foolish to use performance-enhancing drugs.
If you consider my situation, a guy who comes back from arguably, a death sentence, why would I then enter into a sport and dope myself up and risk my life again? That's crazy. I would never do that.
Do we have two or three here?
Oh, we have three. Armstrong explains why he didn't want to sue the media over these stories.
When you sue somebody, it just keeps a bad story alive forever. It gives them the opportunity to say, oh, we found this. Oh, we did that. It gives them more credit than they deserve.
And well, also, apparently, you didn't want to sue them because they were telling the truth, maybe.
No, that's... Well, see again, you're just...
I'm saying maybe.
You're in a weird mood today.
How am I in a weird mood?
You're in a strangely contrarian mood today. Because, you know, the guy who actually accused him of this, in fact, the guy Floyd Landis, who originally accused him of this, was himself then caught taking performance-enhancing drugs. The guy who was accusing him on Sunday on 60 Minutes of taking performance-enhancing drugs has, I think, been convicted of perjury. Also, we should point out that Lance Armstrong has been tested more than any cyclist in the history of the sport.
He is a genetic freak.
And by the French, no less, who had, like, every motivation. I mean, if anybody was even going to, like, plant lab results on Lance Armstrong, it would have been the French because they just loathe him, because they just despise him, because he came in and just routed them, like, time after time after time. And the French kept insisting that he was on some sort of a drug, and he was like, test me. He's like, test me all you want. Test me all day long. And they tested him all day long, and he has never failed a single drug test. Not one. Never. Ever, ever, in the history of drug testing in the sport, he has never once had a positive result.
Then I take back my snarky comment.
I'm just saying,
a philanderer, perhaps, but not a drug user.
You know, you guys got one ball. He can philander all he wants. I don't care. Nobody cares.
A Longview area couple was jailed after investigators said they starved their biological son and four adoptive children. The Cowlitz County Sheriff's Office arrested Jeffrey and Rebecca Treblecock. After a two-month-long investigation...
Not double.
No.
Treble.
Treblecock. After a two-month-long investigation into abuse of their adopted children at their rural home, The children told detectives the parents placed an alarm in the kitchen of the home that was designed to go off when they tried to get food. Faced with being hit by a wooden board if they stole food, they resorted to eating dog food, goat food, and dandelion leaves. So, those people under arrest now.
You can get this program later on the day as a direct MP3 download if you like. That is right here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. That is legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you as you travel about your daily life at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. And so forth. It's also available via iTunes, theoretically. Here's Don Taylor.
Yeah. By the way, the dog food, horrible. Absolutely horrible. The goat food, not so bad.
Not so bad.
No. Oklahoma City police said that while they were responding to a shoplifting call in a metro area grocery store, a man was caught with his pants down behind a soda machine. Police arrested 31-year-old Marshall David Osborne on April 15th on indecent exposure charges after someone alerted police to a man touching himself behind a soda machine at the store's entrance. The person told police they saw a pair of legs sticking out from behind a soda machine, according to the police report. When police went to investigate, they said Osborne had his pants down to his ankles and was touching himself. Once arrested and handcuffed, he was brought to the Oklahoma City jail. When police went to process the shoplifter at the jail, the officer returned to find Osborne with his pants down and touching himself while still handcuffed to the bench.
Well, you know, the guy's got a hobby.
He's like that guy on Sons of Anarchy. He just can't stop.
Just can't seem to it. Just can't seem to leave well enough alone.
Police then added another charge of indecent exposure to his arrest. Getting a story here for you.
Okay.
On my
just take as long as
my
you
little
need.
My little hand computer.
All right.
There we go. Assisted suicide advocate Jack Kevorkian has been hospitalized in Michigan for pneumonia and a kidney-related ailment. The 82-year-old former pathologist has struggled with kidney problems for years and had checked into a hospital earlier this month for similar problems. His lawyer, Mayor Morgenroth, told CNN that he checked into Beaumont Hospital in Detroit's suburb of Royal Oak on Wednesday after suffering a relapse on Wednesday night. Morgenroth said he has some testing to be done. He's a little tired, but he's doing all right. Officials at the hospital could not comment because of confidentiality policies. Kevorkian, of course, dubbed Dr. Death, made national headlines as a supporter of physician-assisted suicide and right-to-diet legislation. He was charged with murder numerous times throughout the 1990s for helping terminally ill patients take their own lives.
Is Mayor Morgenroth, is Mayor Morgenroth a mascot of some kind?
It should be. What would he be, though?
I don't know.
He'd be like a, I don't know, something large, though, and imposing.
Something large.
Morgenroth.
All right.
It's Morgenroth.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. You can get this program later on the day via iTunes. That is not apparently including the episode from the 18th, which is Wednesday. So apparently Wednesday the 18th, that episode not currently available on iTunes, but we're looking into that. Our people are talking to their people.
Oh, so. What happened?
I don't know. So somebody is querying me right now as to why it is not on iTunes, but I think we are attempting to have that remedied, sir, madam, as we speak. So
our crack team.
Crack team of engineers is on it.
All of it. Authorities want to take DNA samples from Unabomber Ted Kaczynski in connection with their investigation into the 1982 incident in which seven people died after taking Tylenol capsules that were laced with potassium cyanide. Cynthia Yates of the FBI said, as part of the re-examination of the 1982 Tylenol poisonings, the FBI attempted to secure DNA from numerous individuals. To date, Kaczynski has declined to voluntarily provide samples. Couldn't they just like?
He's in a cage, isn't he?
And he's got stuff like this.
He's got like a hairbrush.
He's got stuff that's being like
auctioned
on
right
eBay
now. Like they're selling, I think, his like glasses and hood or whatever.
Yeah,
from the
get
photograph.
One of those.
Doesn't really seem like it's all that difficult. That seems like a bit of a known solution.
In a handwritten motion filed in federal court aimed at stopping the online auction of possessions taken from his Montana cabin in 1996, Kaczynski writes that he did agree with a condition to provide the sample. Kaczynski killed three people and wounded 23 others in a string of bombings from 1978 to 1995. The FBI dubbed him the Unabomber because of his early targets, universities and airlines. He was arrested in 1996, pleaded guilty in 1998, and is now serving a life term at the federal Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado. Tracy Billingsley of the Bureau of Prison said it would have been standard procedure for DNA to be taken from Kaczynski as an inmate in a federal prison, but she could not say precisely when Kaczynski's DNA was taken in the past and had no information on the FBI's request for a new sample.
Oh, I'm sorry. It is not the 18th that is absent from iTunes. It is the 19th. It is the episode that we pre-taped.
The Thursday episode.
Yes. So that may or may not be restored as of right now, but I suspect it isn't. So we're going to get that. We'll take it under advisement. We'll get that taken care of at our earliest opportunity. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Radio program coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Today we'll be talking to Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Also, Cannibal Watch, Clergy Watch, and et cetera.
And et cetera?
Yes.
Okay.
And I bid.
What?
Nothing. Go ahead.
I bid. I see. As $4 a gallon gasoline becomes commonplace, drivers have made tough choices. Scaling back vacations, driving less, or ditching their car altogether. And a new Associated Press poll shows the impact of sustained high prices is spreading among seniors and higher income Americans. According to the poll, the share of all Americans who say increases in the price of gasoline will cause serious financial hardship for them or their families in the next 6 months now tops 4 in 10. Overall, 71% who responded to the poll said rising prices will cause some hardship for them and their families, including 41% who called it serious hardship. Just 29% said rising prices are not causing a negative impact on their finances. While those with household incomes under $50,000 were already feeling strained in March, the new poll shows financial pain is increasingly spreading to those with higher incomes. Among those with annual household incomes over $50,000, 63% now say rising prices are causing them financial hardship. A new modernist sculpture of Pope John Paul II is turning into a monumental bust.
Yeah.
The Vatican said Friday that the giant outwork outside Rome's Termini train station doesn't even resemble the Pope. Some Romans and tourists say the bronze statue looks more like Benito Mussolini than the Pope. 71-year-old Antonio LaMonica said, "How could they have given such a kind Pope the head of a fascist?" As he pondered the statue in the bustling square, his wife muttered, "It's ugly, really ugly. Very, very ugly." The artist Oliviero Rinaldi depicted the pontiff as if he is opening his cloak to embrace the faithful.
Really? Is that what they call it now? Embracing the faithful?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, they did release those new abuse guidelines.
Okay.
So apparently we now call it embracing the faithful.
Otherwise, it's just dry humping and faithful.
The Vatican newspaper L'Osservatore Romano said the effect of the nearly 16-foot statue bears only a distant resemblance to the Pope. Artistic assent aside, a critic in Friday's L'Osservatore said, "We find ourselves in the piazza before a violent gash, like a bomb, that ends up assimilating a cloak that almost looks like a sentry box topped by a head of a Pope which comes off too roundish."
What are you talking about?
That's what the guy said, the critic said about the statue.
Okay.
It's a violent gash like a bomb that has a cloak that looks like a sentry box.
Sometimes the jokes are just too easy.
Yeah, I don't know. Rome's mayor, Gianni Alamano, said the city might take down the statue if public opinion is too negative. He said, "There's a saying, vox populi, vox dei.
Voice of the people is the voice of God.
And from this point of view, we cannot help but take into consideration the opinion of the public."
So God prefers a flashing pope.
Apparently. Well, okay. God, I guess the voice of the people would be God saying, apparently, no, we don't like the Benito Mussolini-headed flashing pope.
There's there's sort of a rich history of guys who are sculptors. When they are commissioned to create a sculpture or a statue of somebody they don't particularly care for, or if they're just feeling zany, you know, like in manner of secretly slide in a frame of Jessica Rabbit flashing the audience, that they'll just put somebody else's head on the statue, that they'll just carve a statue of one person and give him somebody else's head.
And then really?
Just sort of figure, yeah, there's actually Bill Bryson has written extensively about this, about any number of, historical and scientific figures throughout the years who were divisive or polarizing in their time. And so when a statue was commissioned to them, somebody would just give them the house of like the head of like the local burgermaster or somebody, like instead of their own face.
So like if we didn't like, say, Court Roberts,
like if
Court,
we were
Court, Court, Court. Bobby Roberts. Let's say we didn't like Bobby Roberts. We'd make a statue of him.
But we would give him Andy Dick's head.
Yeah, or Lars Larson's head or
exactly.
Something like that.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's exactly that.
I kind of actually like the idea of that. I'm looking for my science news. It disappeared.
How's that iPhone working out for you over there?
It's working really good, other than my science news disappeared on
okay.
me. Okay, we'll get back to that in a minute. Catfish farming in Mississippi faces grave danger from flooding. The rising Mississippi River and its swelling tributaries threaten to inundate an economic mainstay that generates $200 million in annual sales. These new woes follow struggles in recent years against competition from Asian imports and high feed prices. Mississippi is the leading U.S. producer of farm-raised catfish, followed by Alabama and Arkansas. Catfish is Mississippi's seventh largest commodity, but numerous challenges, including competition from catfish-like species called bassa and tra, imported from Vietnam, and the high cost of feed, have led some catfish producers to fill their catfish ponds and grow row crops. Catfish farmers say Asian growers produce a cheaper product by using chemicals that have been banned in the United States.
I'm unclear.
So I guess some of the catfish, when you're eating catfish here in the United States, you may be eating a catfish-like species from Asia.
So it's catfish like with a K?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's apparently been grown using some kind of magical miracle grow catfish feed that we don't allow here in America.
You know what I heard actually fairly recently is a lot of people probably say this, but I'd never heard it before. A friend of mine was asking about, I know there was some recipe for some sort of delectable delicacy that she wanted to make, and the ingredients called for crab, and she said, is it crab or can you use K-rab? And I'd never heard the phrase, K-rab before.
Yeah, most people just say crab with a K.
Which is awesome. No. So now that's become part of my lexicon, part of my lingo is to say K-rab if we are, I think is actually also a radio station in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But that has now become part of my vernacular. That is a thing that I use.
You know, K-Rab is actually very tasty, even though it's all full of chemicals.
I can never tell the difference.
And stuff. And it's really cheap. If you go someplace like Cash and Carry, the wholesale grocer, you can buy like a 2 or 3 pound package of it for like just a couple of bucks.
Maybe I've just had bad crab in my life, but I don't think I've ever been able to tell the difference between crab and K-Rab. I've had both, and I just don't think, I think that is a difference that eludes me.
It depends on what you do with it. If it's mixed in something, you really can't tell. If you just try eating it straight out of the package, it's a little dry and sort of artificially sweet.
Is that a thing that people do? Do they just sit around and eat crab out of the package?
My husband does.
Really?
Yeah. He'll eat almost anything just straight out of the package. Raw meat, crab with a K.
Doesn't seem like a finger food.
Yeah. He'll make anything a finger food if you can, though.
Okay.
Let's do our science.
Here's your science on the march. Brought to you by Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. You can also find them at facebook.com/SquiresElectric or SquiresElectric.com. That's where you can locate our good friends at Squires Electric. They will come to your home. They'll come to your business. They'll come to the business in your home, or quite possibly your home at your business, depending on how your relations are going at your place of residence.
They'll help you if you lock your keys in your car.
They'll do that as well. You're talking about Anna Griffin?
Yes.
Except they didn't. By help, what we mean is they'll let you use the phone so you can call the Oregonian, so they'll bring the spare keys down. They weren't actually.
I mean,
they helped.
They tried to help.
They endeavored. They attempted. They gave it the old college try. It didn't really work out. But that just indicates that they're good people. It means that they have the right intentions, that they help here, even if they're not always, actually able to get your car open for you, which, to be fair, isn't like part of their mission statement or anything.
They care because they love.
That's right. You can contact them at 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. And they can take care of the wiring or wires at your home or business if it comes to repair, if it comes to insulation, upgrading, installing, or if you want to make sure that you pass the upcoming inspection to keep the man off your back, they can take care of all that. That is Squires Electric at SquiresElectric.com. Proud sponsors of this, your science on the march.
We humans can brag about our large brain, Rick Emerson, and we do. But in fact, most mammals, from aardvarks to zebras, have big brains for their body size. For years, scientists have wondered what evolutionary forces pumped up the mammal brain so much, and now they believe it's so that mammals could have a better sense of smell. Tim Rowe, a paleontologist with the University of Texas, says part of the mammal brain grew larger as mammals became better sniffers. The evidence comes from the tiny skulls of two kinds of reptile that lived in China about 200 million years ago. These reptiles are believed to have evolved into the first mammals. Rowe said, "We looked at them and went, wow, these are crown jewels." I don't know why I would say that. But they were so tiny, and all we could do was put them behind a microscope and study their external surfaces. That was 20 years ago. Rowe asked if he could break open the cranium and make a cast of the inside to see the shape of the brain that once sat there. The fossil owners said no. So Rowe waited decades until he developed a way to make a digital image of the inside of the cranium using a CT scanner. Rowe made brain images of several specimens that lived millions of years apart, and then he started to notice that the brains changed over time. The smelling part, the olfactory bulb, kept growing. He said, we could see a huge increase in the size of the olfactory bulbs, and behind the olfactory bulbs, where the brain processes signals from the bulb, we could see this region of the brain also got really, really large. So he figured that mammals were moving in and out of burrows and up and down on trees. Their hair offered a lot of sensory information that helped them balance and navigate, but also becoming better smellers helped them to survive better. He said that back then, dinosaurs probably hunted during the day, so it behooved tasty little mammals to stay out of sight until it got dark. And then once the dinosaurs had bedded down for the night, the mammals could come out and start sniffing around for insects and larvae and other things that lived in the soil.
So this is what, you know, because the sense of smell really is fairly amazing. It is the sense most closely linked with memory. And it's also one of the senses that is the hardest to quantify. In other words, it's the hardest for scientists to understand exactly how it functions, how it operates, or how it triggers things within the brain. Consider this, for example. Consider how crucial the sense of smell is, yet how amorphous it is. Consider the difficulty you have when trying to explain to somebody else how something smells.
Yeah.
Without actually just comparing it. In other words, if you had to describe something that no one had ever seen before, you could probably still do it because you could give a visual description. You could say, well, it's tall and it's thin and it's got this, it's orange on one side, green on the other. You can't really do that with anything that is smell-based. That is why it is not legal to trademark. You are not allowed to trademark a scent in the United States because of the recognition of the fact that the way smell works in your brain is almost impossible to quantify. And yet, as you noted, it's evolutionarily crucial.
And apparently, I'm assuming that that's one of the reasons why it's such a huge part of our memory, too, is because our brains have evolved over the years to be bigger and bigger to accommodate our sense of smell.
Yes.
So there you go. It is a very strange sensation when you're like walking down the street or something. I find this thing of like I've talked about working at the Renaissance Fair, and I've had moments here in Portland where I'll be walking, it'll be like a sort of a rainy, cool, overcast day, and I'll be in the vicinity of like a food cart pod, and I'll smell like the smoke coming off the food cart, and the combination of trees and early morning like dew and the coolness and then the smell of the smoke will always like bring back that memory of like early mornings being at this Renaissance Fair. And it's just like, boom, it's like I'm just there again. It's very, very vivid and very strange.
Well, like way more so than any other sense. I mean, I think it's like sound, they say, is second in terms of linkage to memory, but it's like a distant second. By the way, so evolutionarily speaking, by dint of my oversized nose, mm-hmm. I am really Darwin's champ.
Oh, how does that nose blowing going today, by the way?
What's that?
The nose blowing from yesterday.
How do you mean?
You were having some nose blowing.
I was having some nasal issues yesterday.
Are you good today?
No, I was all crudded up.
Oh.
So, no, I'm fine now.
Oh, good.
I'm back in the swing of things.
Congratulations.
That's right. I'm top of the world.
Some hearing loss is a common and nearly unavoidable effect of aging. A third of people 60 and older have lost some of their ability to hear. But some intriguing research suggests a habit that might help offset the effects of aging on hearing. A study published recently in an online science journal found that among middle-aged adults, being a lifelong musician was associated with better hearing later in life. Nina Kraus, a biologist with the Northwestern University Auditory Neuroscience Laboratory, said, "The instrument you play does not seem to be important. It's really the act of engagement of playing the instrument that matters." Participants in the study were between ages 45 and 65. Researchers tested 18 musicians who had been playing an instrument since age 9 or younger and 19 non-musicians who had less than 3 years of music training. The musicians had statistically better auditory memory scores and tested better at hearing speech in noisy environments. They also showed better auditory temporal processing abilities, which relates to how people interpret speech sounds. The two groups tied when it came to visual working memory skills. And so it's not like musical training has a volume knob effect that makes all kinds of sensory processing enhance. It focuses purely on your auditory skill.
Yeah, so this is, and so if you're a musician, it's not that your hearing is going to be more intact throughout your life. It's just that it's going to be more finely trained. It's just that you will have gotten more practice.
And
your brain
is going to actually be able to interpret different sounds in different situations much more efficiently than if you don't play a musician.
It's like being an auditory sommelier.
Yes.
That's exactly what it's like. There you go. Tell me I'm not a sophisticated. Sons of bitches. Suck that.
4 years after they first frightened France, Muslim creationists are back touring the country, preaching against evolution, and claiming that the Quran predicted many modern scientific discoveries. followers of Harun Yahya, a well-financed Turkish publisher of popular Islamic books, held four conferences at Muslim centers in the Paris area last weekend, with more scheduled in six other cities. At a Muslim junior high school in a North Paris suburb, about 100 pupils listened as two Turks from Harun Yahya's headquarters in Istanbul denounced evolution as a theory Muslims should shun. The lecturer told the giggling youngsters, "We didn't descend from the apes." Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, he said, was the scientific basis to defend atheism. Harun Yahya is one of the most prolific publishers in the Muslim world. He gave proudly secularist France a scare in January 2007 by mass mailing thousands of free copies of his Atlas of Creation to schools and libraries across the country. The education ministry quickly ordered headmasters to seize and hide copies of the large format book that had over 768 pages of glossy photographs and easy-to-read text, arguing that all living things were created by God exactly as they are formed today. They followed up with a special seminar to train teachers how to counter a small but growing group of pupils who challenge evolution with creationist theories. So, yeah.
There's some sort of irony in the fact that it's a small but growing group of pupils who are challenging creationist theories. It's
yeah.
a small but steadily advancing complexifying group.
Well, considering, like they said, France is very secular.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, he's sort of beaten his drum in the wrong place, really.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Is that the end of science?
That is all of our science.
There you go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. Somebody asked in the text box, says, you know, remind me to get a when I'm done making the subdivision. Remind me to get my to fetch my bottle of water. I've got a decidedly brackish kind of thing going on in my mouth right now. Somebody's saying this is why I love Legion of News. Only on this program could a Catholic, that's a fallen Catholic by the way, could a Catholic agnostic and an atheist actually be talking about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as though it affects either of them or matters to either of them.
Well,
all right. Well, it's what we do, sir.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, we have many, many tools in the, we have many arrows in the Legion of News quiver here.
Also, sir, tell me that there are not things that you have opinions about that don't directly affect you.
And by the way, just for the purposes of clarification, lest it seem as though our studio has become some sort of a weird microcosm of, like, we've become some sort of broadcastian Gaza Strip. I hold no party blameless in the Mideast kerfuffle, but it just seems that it does seem to me that from era to era, we just sort of arbitrarily pick one side of the conflict on whom we will then apportion most of the blame. And it just seems like that rotates about every 50 years, that we just decide that one group was to blame for all of the ills in the area. And so if they could just be dealt with somehow, then everything would go back to normal. And I don't really know that that's true. It seems like it's just been a Punch and Judy match back and forth, you know, for like 2,500 years. And I mean, long before the creation of Israel. So that's my only point.
I think from my point of view, it's just sheer stubbornness on my part that I believe I at some point decided that I would be.
You just don't like the fact that anybody who has a problem with Israeli behavior is dubbed an anti-Semite.
Exactly.
That's it.
That's pretty much it.
It's almost like I knew that all along.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think because of that, that just irritated me so much.
Right.
I just started leaning pro-Palestinian because it was just if you criticize Israel at all,
Israel, Don?
Yeah.
Well, I guess he didn't, but you know what I mean. You know who would have criticized Israel, Don? His name was Hitler. No, that's yeah. That's why I brought it back, because I knew that that was at the root of the entire thing. By the way, that you do not like the idea that that one cannot have a problem with behavior by Israel without being reflexively dubbed an anti-Semite.
Yes.
And I totally get that.
I come from a long line of Irish Catholics, so I grew up with around a lot of attitudes about people being like pissed off that people like took our land and
that's different. The Irish are children, they can't be allowed to run anything,
you know, and the best way to deal with things was to put bombs in people's cars, so you know.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, have you seen the way they try to run their farmland? Come on.
A Pennsylvania woman will stand trial on charges she fed marijuana-laced margarine to a 12-year-old girl she was babysitting, as well as two other children at her home. The 12-year-old's mother called Upper Burrell Township police after discovering the drugs in a tub of I can't believe it's not butter in 22-year-old Stevie Hickey's freezer. The woman told police Hickey spread the substance on two pieces of toast that Hickey gave to the girl. Police say Hickey told the girl it was parsley butter, but later acknowledged to police that, yes, it had marijuana in it. The Valley News Dispatch in Tarentum reported Hickey remains free after waiving her right to a preliminary hearing on marijuana possession and child endangerment charges.
By the way, I want to read this. This is our audience in a nutshell. This is like the guy who called up for tech support the other day and then he had to move his Four Loko out of the way because he wasn't able to use the mouse while drinking. We have this. It says, the people in the Middle East are just pissed off because they can't hit In-N-Out for a double-double after the news, like I'm going to, right now, today. Signed, Mike, black guy in San Diego.
See, I'm angry that now I can't have one either.
We should go raise something to the ground.
So I'm just going to go sit out on the sidewalk and pour gasoline on my head and set myself on fire.
Let's go occupy an In-N-Out right now.
Ooh, yes. We will nationalize it.
Yes.
A woman who claimed she was groped by Donald Duck during her visit to Epcot theme park has settled her federal lawsuit against Disney. Court documents indicate April Megalon settled.
Was she drawing? Did she draw like a sketch, like a perp sketch?
Where it's
like,
where you know, did the bad duck touch you?
No. The bill is somewhat longer. No. Okay, and then he had a sailor suit, and then huge saucer-like eyes.
No, he wasn't wearing any pants.
I mean, seriously, how would you identify? I mean, if you were groped by Donald Duck, if you were groped by a guy in a Donald Duck outfit. Does Disneyland only ever have one Donald Duck at a time roaming the park?
No.
So they have multiple people dressed up as, like, whoever?
Yeah.
See, I would think they wouldn't do that. I would think that they would only ever have one Mickey, one Goofy, one Donald, because otherwise it ruins the illusion.
Well, I think it depends on where you are. I know that they have multiple suits for things like the character breakfast, so that the people who are going to be, like, roaming around the rest of the park at, like, Disneyland, they're free to go do that. And then they usually have an extra suit. It's like for somebody who's just doing a specific thing in a specific place. Plus, they have multiple suits, of course, that have different like hats and clothes and things on them as well.
Did she explain how the groping happened?
Well, she said a costumed park employee grabbed her breast during a May 2008 visit to the Florida park. The Upper Darby woman claims she had nightmares, digestive problems, and other permanent injuries. She sought more than $50,000 in compensation plus punitive damages. A Disney spokeswoman declined to discuss the details of the settlement. If the duck did grab her breast, it was undoubtedly entirely accidental.
Well, because you can't really maneuver that thing.
No,
it's like trying to steer a barge.
No, they can't see out of the head. That's one of the reasons why there's so many fascinating things about the costume character thing for me. Because, like, as you know, I'm freaked out by people in big animal suits. But at the same time, the idea of being like actual Disney employees inside the suits, people who do that, is kind of fascinating to me. And I remember reading once someone who had to do one of the worst suits to be in were the Seven Dwarves. Because the Seven Dwarves, the head was huge, but the arms were loose. You didn't actually, your body was, to make them shorter, the head came all the way down almost to your waist. So your arms are pinned straight down. And then the arms were actually loose and just sort of flopped along with these big, heavy hands.
You couldn't really control them all that well.
Yeah, so you had no hands to use. You had to have somebody put you in and take you out of it. But the thing is, like, with everybody with a suit, they would get swarmed with children. And you get, like, swarmed with children, you can't see very well. You need to walk. And so the people in the dwarf suits had this particular defensive maneuver they do where you just start swinging your body from side to side so the arms swing and the big heavy hands would just clomp kids in the head and get them out of the way.
Just taking them down like wheat before the sickle. Just so your whole thing is that if Donald Duck is going to, let's say, put his arm around a woman, it's entirely possible he could inadvertently be groping a breast.
Yeah, because they're just trying to see out of these two little like round holes, like way up inside of a head. They have tunnel vision for one thing. They have no peripheral vision. So yeah, he may have, it's like, pose for a picture with me, Donald, and he may have put his arm around and accidentally like got the breast because like can't see what the hell he's doing in there.
I'm trying to find, I think I have audio somewhere from the woman who talking about the groping by Donald Duck when it actually happened. Let's see if I've got this here. Let's see. This is Disney World touching. That sounds like that could be it. Is this Disney World or Disneyland?
Disney World. It was at Epcot.
Okay, so this may be it. Hold on. Let me see if I've got let me see if I can get this here. Hold on a second. This is let's see. So,
and more breaking news right now in Orange County. Another man's just been arrested on charges of molesting a child at Disney's
Typhoon
Lagoon.
No, this would be different.
This is the fifth sex crime at a local park in just a month. Channel 9's Jeff Deal is live right now at the Orange County Sheriff's Office. Jeff, what do you know?
Well, Marty, David Thomas just walked out of the sheriff's office here within the last 20 minutes or so. He is on his way heading to jail. He didn't say anything to us when he walked out of here, but according to sheriff's investigators, based on what they're telling us, apparently he let his hands do the talking while he was inside that wave pool over at Typhoon Lagoon. Again, the suspect is 29-year-old David Thomas. He seemed very stoic tonight. Investigators say...
I think that's why I kept it. It was
according to sheriff's investigators, based on what they're telling us, apparently he let his hands do the talking while he was inside.
All right, there you go. That's why I felt that was necessary to be. It was necessary to file that away because it was a guy inserting a little verbal flair into his report. All right. So apparently, there's more groping stories than one would anticipate because I've got several of these now that I look through my folders here. So all right.
Yeah, I heard. I can't remember what it was. I was going to try and remember. I was watching the news last night, and somebody on the news made some kind of It was something about Gabrielle Giffords. Oh, yeah, and how apparently she didn't like the hat they put on her or something. I can't remember. It was something like that. She's had to wear some kind of special headgear or something because, you know, she was shot in the head. And they were talking about it on the news and going, and Giffords apparently didn't like the headgear and had been complaining repeatedly about how uncomfortable it was and wanted them to take it off. And I looked over at Patrick and I said, that's funny because she's brain damaged. You know, It seemed just way inappropriate. They thought it was so cute. She was telling the nurses that the headgear over her damaged skull was uncomfortable. So, Portland police have arrested a man accused of distributing counterfeit electronic products. Hung Truong, 38, faces one count of trademark counterfeiting in the first degree. On Thursday, Portland Police Bureau detectives assigned to the White Collar Crimes Detail served a search warrant as part of an ongoing investigation. They said they confiscated a large number of counterfeit items, including hundreds of batteries for electronics manufactured by companies like Sony, Nikon, and JVC. Detectives said they also seized 17 DirecTV access cards, 58 Bose speakers, 2,408 Dish Network remotes, 2,100 Sony remotes, and 87 HP remotes. According to Portland Police Bureau, trademark counterfeiting and patent infringement crimes are increasing at an alarming rate.
So these are all, but it's not just, it's the remotes themselves that seem to be the bulk of the items that he actually had?
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
Is there like a hot
access cards,
market in that?
Well, access cards, Bose speakers, and then I guess, yeah. Well, I guess if you go to like some kind of cheesy Jim's Happy Discount Store, one of the places that has like the flashing lights in the window and the stuff, and then you go in and they've got like a Bose speaker or a Dish Network remote, and it's just on a card with something misspelled, and it costs
$4.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might realize that you're sure it'll probably work on your machine, but it's not actually an official product.
You know, here's the thing that never really works correctly the way you want it to. It's the universal remote. When you buy a universal remote, that's a product that you are always dissatisfied with. I mean, unless you're getting kind of the new space age kind where it's got basically the iPhone surface and you can actually, where there are no actual buttons and you can just create the screen, literally the keypad from scratch. If you're getting like the old school universal remote like you get at Radio Shack where it's just got like 70 buttons on the top and it's programmable, that is a purchase that you are never, ever, ever happy with. And you will go through your life buying one after another, trying to find one that actually makes you happy.
Well, and also, my problem has always been that I just need it to do like a couple of things, and it always seems to have way more buttons than I actually need. And 2 years later, I'm going, what is this for? And then I push it, and then it reprograms like everything, and I'm sorry I touched it. Is that just me?
Yes.
Okay, then never mind. I'll stop talking.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at RickEmersonShow.com. We'll talk to Mr. Big Jim Willig. We'll also have a Cannibal Watch, Clergy Watch, and all of that. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. You can download this later directly here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionofNews.com, and you can also get it via iTunes series on Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news. For Friday.
The divorce of Mad Men star Elizabeth Moss from her comedian husband Fred Armisen is final. Los Angeles Superior Court records show Judge Hugh Bobus granted the couple...
Hugh Bobus.
granted the couple a divorce on May 13th, roughly 8 months after the actress moved to end her marriage to the Saturday Night Live star. The pair were married in October 2009, but separated last June. There are no details of any financial settlement. There we go. More continues to come to light about the extramarital affair former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger had with a household staffer more than a decade ago, which resulted in a child. There is word that Maria Shriver has retained a divorce lawyer, although there have been no comments made about the couple divorcing. TMZ's Harvey Levin.
Yeah.
Says that the housekeeper at the center of this had a keen interest in Maria.
So Shriver won?
Yes.
This is crazy. So this woman, she goes by Patty, actually. She wants to be or wanted to be Maria Shriver. She would tell her friends this, that she had an obsession with Maria.
Have you seen any pictures of this, of the housekeeper?
Yeah, she's a, you know.
She looks strangely Teutonic. I mean, because I guess she's... She was like Peruvian or something, or she was South American or Latin American. She looks strangely Germanic though in all of the photos.
Well, she has that strange, like, should normally have like dark brown or black hair, but has bleached it blonde and it.
Oh, see, all the photographs I saw, she had like the dark hair.
Oh, maybe I saw.
And just legs like tree trunks, man. I mean, she's like a not actually fat, but just sort of stumpy.
Well,
kind of a
she's solid. She's stocky. She looks like you would
stocky as though she's husky.
She looks like you would want a housekeeper to look.
Well, she looks, and she kind of looks like the only sort of woman that Schwarzenegger could probably really just throw it into nice and hard without just snapping her in half.
Oh God, I hadn't even thought about.
You know what
that.
I'm saying? No, I mean,
I'm
look
sure
at Maria Shriver.
He probably had to be very delicate with Maria Shriver.
Maria Shriver's just, I mean, it's like having, you know, seriously.
Or she could cut yourself like on her cheekbones.
Having sex with a seagull. I mean, you just have to, you know, I mean, just, you know, tiny little bird legs and all, you know. I mean, I'm sure Maria Shriver's a nice woman. I'm just saying it seems. You know what it is? Having sex with Maria Shriver's like having sex with that Mr. Salty guy, the pretzel mascot. Where you just, oh, I cannot wait to hold you in my embrace. Maria. Crap. And then you got to call 911, you know, and that housekeeper.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
sure.
Like she's a that is having relations with an oak is, yes. what you're doing there.
So he can
also she has a she has what my grandmother would call bosoms out to here. So,
and birth and hips.
Seriously, you have, I mean, I'll find the photo gallery that I saw of her. Really, she is a substantial woman. Not all that attractive, but I mean, you know, but durable, rugged.
Levin says the housekeeper, as he said before, was obsessed with Shriver.
She would tell her friends this, that she had an obsession with Maria, that she would take Maria's clothes and jewelry and wear them out in public without Maria knowing about it, obviously.
Uh-huh. Levin says the woman, who is the mother of Schwarzenegger's son, has told her friends in the past she was the one who put the moves on him, not the other way around.
She has told, you know, people in her world is that she pursued him and aggressively pursued him, and that what happened was in the morning when Maria would leave to take the kids to school or whatnot, that's when they would get together and had unprotected sex.
Is it like in her day planner after
unprotected sense with Arnie?
Seriously, after, you know, after Pilates and, like, you know, make egg white omelet for a whole family, have unprotected sex with employer, which. And I have to say that whatever one thinks of Harvey Levin, I instinctively believe that version of events, because there's much more motivation for her to do that than there is for Schwarzenegger, especially when you consider the fact that, you know, even then he was like, I mean, what is this, 13 years ago? So he was not quite the governor, but he was, you know, 13 years ago would have been what, 1998? So, I mean, you know, still one of the biggest movie stars in the entire world, also wealthy, also famous, also powerful.
And a busy man. It's not like he can go out looking for spare tail.
Yeah, and
you know,
I mean,
it's like, this woman's right here. She's right here in the house.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, it seems like it would be to your advantage if you're the, as I think it will be shown to be, if you're the housekeeper, to, you know, to if you're going to strip some guy, why not strip the guy that can make your life a little easier?
And plus, as soon as you're done, she'll, like, you know, go wash the sheets and make you a snack.
Now I need you to do the tidying up. Thank you.
So, in addition, he also told his talent agency Thursday, Mr. Schwarzenegger did, that he is going to postpone all of his movie projects. A statement from the office said, Governor Schwarzenegger is focusing on personal matters and is not willing to commit any production schedules or timelines.
So we'll be denied the sweet taste of Terminator 5.
Yeah.
No. All right.
People magazine reported this week that Shriver has retained prominent Los Angeles divorce attorney Laura Wasser. If the Kennedy heiress and former network TV anchor goes ahead with the divorce, several prominent attorneys say she's likely to cash in big. Atlanta attorney John Mayo, who represented Chris Rock in his paternity suit, and also baseball star David Justice in his split with Halle Berry, says, "It seems to me that he has gratuitously embarrassed her. This should greatly enhance settlement negotiations."
Yeah, but I mean, you know, let's be honest. I mean, of all, I know that everybody wants to read a lot of sexual politics, you know, into, no pun intended, into this whole thing. But I mean, come on. I mean, she's a Kennedy. How could she possibly be surprised by this? I mean, of all people, of all the women in the entire world who should not be registering any shock or amazement that a rich politician was philandering when nobody was around. I mean, a Kennedy seems like she's like the last in line there.
Everyone in her family's going, "Honey, it happens."
I mean, seriously. I mean, do you think anybody but Maria Shriver was surprised at this?
Well, especially since we went through this thing like probably about 8 or 10 years ago. Remember when it was in all the news about how gropey he was?
Yeah.
You know, with news anchors,
which
and
he
just
sort of admitted.
Random women.
And he admitted it, you know, in that way that politicians, you know, sometimes do, where he says, "Well, you know, when I was a younger man, I behaved badly. But then I learned that that was not the way you conduct yourself," or whatever it is. I think he used that phrase, "behaved badly."
Yeah.
Which is sort of a Clintonian thing of him saying, like, "Look, I know what I did. You know what I did. Let's just, you know, come on. Let's move on." Like he talked about, if you watch Pumping Iron, there's that thing where I think it's in Pumping Iron where he talks about getting high. He talks about smoking pot or something, but he goes, you know, he said, "Well, you do not always make the right choices when you are young," and which is, you know, exactly the right thing to say if you're running for office, because like when Barack Obama talked about doing blow, you know, back in college or whatever, and he said, you know, and he goes, "I realized I wasn't going to be able to get, you know, achieve the things I wanted to achieve, so I had to stop doing that," and everybody kind of goes, "Oh, that's great," and because on the one hand, yeah, you're like giving and then taking away from any sort of scandal,
learning from the Clinton thing, and. You know, and don't say something lame like you didn't inhale.
Totally. Well, that is, you know what it is, that the difference between Clinton handling it and like Barack Obama handling, you know, it like the, you know, the pot versus the blow. That is the difference between the T-800 and the T-1000. Every generation learns from the generation before it. It's like those robots that build a breed of robots following them. It's like deep thought building the Earth. You know, every breed is smarter and faster and more adaptive than the breed before it. So within I would imagine 2 or 3 generations, politicians will be able to just, run puppy mills and just spend their evenings just putting chickens through, you know, through wood chippers in their backyard, and we won't be able to do anything about it.
It'll be like the Italian guys who are like, "Yes, of course I have a mistress. I've got 5. Here they are."
Exactly.
Vote for me.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and then we'll be able to focus on something else.
Lady Gaga is the first Twitter user with over 10 million followers, which is a first for both the singer and for Twitter. She celebrated her milestone with a tweet saying, "10 million monsters! I'm speechless. We did it. It's an illness. How I love you." The mega-popular music celebrity is a huge social media star. Having been the most popular user on Twitter for quite some time now, she's also the first person to hit 10 million fans on Facebook, as well as 1 billion views on YouTube.
Wow.
Lady Gaga recently partnered with the social gaming company Zynga to launch Gagaville, a Lady Gaga-themed offshoot of Farmville.
Which is sort of fantastic because it's just so relentlessly dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, that is an idea that is so fundamentally stupid that it sort of becomes great again when it comes out of the other end of the tunnel. I do have to say that as much as I didn't care for that Born This Way single, which I would have liked a lot more if it hadn't just been, you know, such a shameless Madonna ripoff, I do get that Judas song stuck in my head like all the time. So I mean, I gotta give up to her for that. Now let's do we got like 55 seconds.
Well, we'll just mention this really quickly. We'll talk about this more in the next hour. Pro wrestler Macho Man Randy Savage was killed this morning in Florida when the Jeep he was driving jumped a median and hit a tree. His wife was in the passenger seat. She was injured and is expected to be released from the hospital. His real name was Ralph Mario Poffo. The couple lived in Seminole, Florida, and an investigation is underway. The report says that he lost control of his Jeep Wrangler for unknown reasons as it was traveling on Florida State Route 694.
So we'll get to that next hour when we are also joined by Mr. Big Jim Willig, who will be in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and work of Mr. Steve Martin. Also Cannibal Watch, also Clergy Watch. That is all on the way. And that is, they say, is that awesome. On that note, we bring to a conclusion another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Ackler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. You can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. Have a safe and satisfying weekend. We'll see you Monday at noon.